Hi, everybody. My name is Stevie B. I'm a recovering alcoholic, former member of the West Side Men's Group, and a member now of the Golden Text Group of Hollywood, Florida. Good to be here with you guys. And I want to tell you, it's an honor to be asked by Paul. I have so much respect for him and his wife and what they do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And Paul makes it fun, and he makes it attractive. And I want you to know that Alcoholics Anonymous should be attractive. Paul said to me, "You seem very excited." Of course I'm very excited. I mean, who wouldn't be excited? I mean, this is the big show right here. You know how long it takes you to get to this meeting? 20 years. It takes you a long time to get to this meeting. And then they asked me to speak right on my anniversary of my 20th year. Vinny asked me to speak, Paul, right on my anniversary, and then never asked me again. I'm like, I don't know what happened. It took me 20 years to get there, and then nobody asked me ever again. So I'm really excited to tell you how it was and what it's like. Because first of all, if you don't remember my name tonight, you don't thank me, and you remember that I'm talking about God, my job is done. If you leave here tonight, you got a fire in your belly for God, I have accomplished my goal. And I didn't know that. I grew up in the 12-step house. There's a couple people in here I always mention. I always mention Wendy, who happens to be here tonight, because of the kindness that she showed me. The people that showed you kindness when you first came, you're never going to forget them. I want to share that with you. Janet tells me she never forgets about me. And there's people that in this 12-step house, in this fellowship that showed me kindness and opened up doors for me and showed me how cool it was to be sober, which the last thing in my mind, I want to be sober. You know, to me, that was the uncoolest thing you could possibly do, would be sober or to go to an AA meeting on a Saturday night. That is the uncoolest thing. But Wendy's one of those people that just loved on me and my wife. Loved on me and then loved on my wife later, years later when I met her. And then there's a guy tonight, Jimmy, that I saw that was just so welcoming. And he was like the coolest guy in AA that I had ever met. And I wanted to be just like Jimmy. And Jimmy invited me to his house and him and his wife. And those are the people you know you're in the right place. Like Sheldon's got a whole table over there where he's invited people to sit down with him and say, we got you, you know? So I want you to know, if you're here in the 12th step, you're new, I know there's a bunch of people, we got you. You're in the right place. You didn't arrive here by accident. Someone said to my sponsor when he was hanging out at a Howard Johnson's years ago, they said, but what do you guys do for fun? This is it. This is what we do for fun right here. This is like a great time for us. We love Alcoholics Anonymous. You're going to get there. If you don't love Alcoholics Anonymous, stay till you love it. Then you want to come. And so let me tell you a little bit about my history. My history is, and Paul's right, I ask God to speak through me before I come up, and no talk should ever be the same. I mean, there's going to be some parts of it where they're going to be saying, because it's my story, you know, how it was. But it shouldn't be something where you say, well, I've already heard that before. Because even though we have our stories, God will constantly disclose to you and to us more about what he wants you to share, more about what he wants you to reveal, more what he wants you to remember. Imagine if he gave you all the thoughts and all the memories at one time. You'd be overwhelmed by the amount of poop we did in the past. By the way, I heard the first speaker that he brought here the first week was very vulgar and also used my name in vain, Brad. So I do want to let you know you're not going to hear any vulgarity out of my mouth, or will I mention his name, which I just did. So you just let him know your best friend, who I love. So you're not going to hear any cursing from my, not that I'm a prude, because my wife is here, who I just loved to pieces. You know, I call her my beautiful. My wife is here, and she'll tell you when she met me, I cursed a lot. I'm from New York. We don't even know it's cursing, right, Mike? We don't even know it's cursing. We just, it's the way we speak. You can't get a piece of pizza where I'm from unless you say, is that an effing good piece of pizza? So I cursed all the time and everything that I said, everything that I did. But God has relieved me of so much stuff that I'm not the man that I used to be. People meet me, they come and visit because we live in Florida. They come visit me and they say, stop putting on an act. I go, it's not an act. God will do for you what you cannot do for yourself. And I was speaking to a guy on the way here. Don't worry, I'm gonna jump around. It's going to be like Pulp Fiction. At the end, it's all going to come together and you'll understand it. So a guy just called me. He was crying on the phone. Mason was there. He was crying on the phone, crying on the phone, crying on the phone. I said to him, and he was my nurse at the hospital. He was my nurse at the Fort Lauderdale Hospital 22 years ago. I had 7 years and I relapsed. And the relapse was horrific. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. If you're newly coming back, I want you to know God will restore that. And I was laying on his desk, literally laying on his desk at the Fort Lauderdale Hospital. I had just taken 6 Xanax bars on the way in. And I was slobbering all over myself. I was foaming all over myself. And this boy, this man, Adam, a nurse, he was so compassionate with me. And he called me up just now and he said, do you have time for me? I said, do I have time for you? You helped save my life. He said, yeah, but you're such a God guy. I said, was I a God guy when I was thrown up on your desk 22 years ago? I wasn't a God guy. I was an addict that was in suffering in my own illness. And then God, in his infinite wisdom, reached down from heaven and saved me, a wretch like me. And this is what I said. And Adam, here's the great news. He's going to do the same for you. Because the big book, which has never failed me, the first 164 pages, you can take that to, you can take, the first 164 pages is from God, my opinion. So everything that I say can be weighed in the first 164 pages. And so I said, Adam, if he did it for me, he'll do it for you. So now I go to weigh it. What does that mean? I go to check it out. And you won't be able to check it out if you don't know the first 164 pages. If you don't read this, you won't be able to check it out because you won't know where to go. You're going to say something come out of your mouth like meaty makers make it. And you're going to be like, it's in the big book, but it's not in the big book. It's a good thing. Meeting makers certainly have a better shot of making it, but it doesn't say anything about that in the first 164 pages, right, Paul? It doesn't say that. So when I told Adam that God is going to do for him what he did for myself, it's because the big book says that God is not a respecter of persons. That means he's not going to bless good-looking Johnny, and he's not going to bless me. I call him good-looking Johnny behind his back. Yeah. Now he knows. What he's done for me, he's going to do for you. What he does for you, he will do for me. What he did for Fleming, he will do for me. You want to get 42 years? By the way, congratulations, Fleming. That's amazing. 42 years, right? 42 years. You want to get 42 years? You don't die. You go to meetings. You continue to be of service. You know, the big one is don't die. That's the big one. You don't drink. And then you're going to get to pour into a lot of people's lives. The people that come before you, Ricky D came before me, helped me and my wife so many times in my program. There's people that are going to come before that are going to pour into you. But you can't be poured into if your glass is to the top and you know everything. If your first thing you say is you know, well, then you get to be right. And my first sobriety, I knew everything. I'm hip, slick, and cool. I'm from New York. I got all the answers. And I got like both sides of the street covered because I'm half Jewish and half Italian. So I got everything. Hair gel, 5 gold chains, guinea tees, Cavarici jeans. I was all about me. The kid is here. They told me the program was about ego deflation. I'm like, what? I don't know. What are you even talking about? Why would I want to deflate this? I think Kelly said it last week. I was a defect looking for character. And so the only two things I thought I needed to change was cocaine and alcohol. I didn't think anything else needed to be changed. Those are the two things I needed to change. Everything else was just fine. Came from a good family. Had all the answers. Didn't even know the questions. Had all the answers. Would give you the answer before you asked me the question. You'd come over to me, I'd be, I got that. Who taught you? Nobody taught me. I needed to shut up. And I came to the 12-step house, and a beautiful man by the name of Myron, may God rest his soul, the locksmith of Broward County, died with 44 years of sobriety. Fleming's best friend, one of Fleming's best friends, took me under his wing. Danny took me under his wing, and Wendy and Paul took me under their wing, and Maury and Ruth Rogers in the back room, and they took me under their wing, and I was a 24-year-old kid with all the answers, but they said, shut up, kid. No, they didn't even say shut up. They said, sit down and keep coming back. I'm sure they wanted to say shut up, but they were like extra loving with me. And they said, keep quiet. Everything's going to be okay. And it was. For like 5 years, everything was fine until it wasn't. If you don't do the steps that are outlined in this book, then you're going to have alcoholism return. Alcoholism has nothing to do with drinking. I was a severe alcoholic by 12, and I never had a drink. By the age of 12, I was doing severe alcoholic things, and I had never had a drink. There was a kid in my neighborhood that was like the coolest kid. His name is Kevin, and he was big, and he got left back, and he had muscles, and he had a mustache, and we were 12. And I wanted to be like Kevin. And but I knew Kevin wouldn't hang out with me because I, my whole life, I've always measured my outsides with, I've always measured my insides with your outsides. Like the first time I saw Paul in the room, I'm like, oh my God, look at that guy. That guy's amazing. I'll never be like him. And then we got to be friends. I realized our insides match. We both have insecurities. Doesn't matter what the outside person has. Sometimes the most people that have it on the outside all together, they need the most love on the inside. And I went up to Kevin and I said, would you like to come hang out with me? And he said, why? Why would I want to hang out with you? And I said, because I had guns. I have guns. Because my dad is a Korean War hero. May God rest his soul. He fought on Pork Chop Hill. And my dad had guns. And I wasn't allowed to use those guns unless my dad was around. But my dad was out on an emergency, family emergency. And I went and I told Kevin, we have guns. My first really willful act of an alcoholic would never even had a drink. I've been willful my whole life. I got kicked out of nursery school. Raise your hand if you got kicked out of nursery school. Nobody has ever gotten kicked out, other than a couple very serious degenerates in here. Nobody usually gets kicked, because the bar is not that high in nursery school. You know, they're really not setting it that high. I was asked, Mrs. McGillicuddy says, Steve can't come back. He's biting all the children. Lewis, you probably had that problem, yeah. And so I'm 12 years old, and I invite Kevin over, and we start blowing stuff up in the backyard, and then he gets bored, and he's about to leave. And I said to Kevin, don't leave. If you stay, if you don't flat leave me, if you stay, you can shoot at me. Ooh. And I meant it. I meant it. I meant it today as I meant it then. That you don't leave, you can shoot at me. Seemed like a totally normal thing to do. I've made that statement in a lot of different ways over the last 40 years, a lot of different ways, a lot of different endings. Don't leave me, don't, you know, whatever the thing is. And I let him shoot at me because it seemed like a good trade-off. And a one in a million shot, he shot me right in my eye. I lost my right eye. And I'm laying on the lawn there with my eye all over myself, and my sister's crying her eyes out. And the only thing I could think about, the kids in the school the next day thinking that I was uncool and that Kevin not liking me. Imagine this. I'm laying there, my eyes blown to pieces, and I'm worried about people finding out how uncool I really am. Well, I'm telling you, if you have that, if you feel that low in your life, when you go to take a drink and a drink will make you an almost or even a something, you're not just going to give up a drink because you get some financial problem or some legal problems or some physical problems or some social problems. You're not just going to give up. If alcohol did for you what it did for me, you're not just going to give that up. Because alcohol makes me a somebody, or at least an almost. Then I always become a somebody. Then I overshoot the mark. And then, you know, I'm, you know how it is. My emotional regulator, when it comes to alcohol and drugs, there's a short window where everything's all right. I'm always shooting for everything's all right. And I always wind up not all right. And if you have that, you have alcoholism. It doesn't matter what you know, some of the other people are like, I'm not an alcoholic because I never drank. Alcohol is not about drinking. You look at the old times, yeah, it's obvious they're alcoholics. I mean, look at them. But then in my generation and now, we mix stuff up. Doesn't matter what you used, you have alcoholism. There's nothing that fixes alcoholism better than and quicker than a drink. It's just like that. And then the problem then that you get, that sets off an allergy, which is in the doctor's opinion, the big book of alcoholism, right in the beginning, it sets off an allergy, which sets off a compulsion, and we can't stop. Right, Amanda? We can't stop. That's the problem. We can't stop. We look like we should be able to stop. And then the thing is, we sit around with other people at restaurants or bars or at school or college or whatever you're at, and other people can drink, they can even get drunk, and then the next day they say, so we say, oh, when are we going to do it again? And they go, whoa, what do you mean? Whoa. I got drunk last night. Well, I'm like, of course, what are you talking about? And they're like, no, we got to study. I'm like, study what? You know, I have friends, my roommate was like, don't you remember throwing up last night? I'm like, and? I mean, what did that even have to do with the equations? I'm in the more business, you know, more. And so I'm a real alcoholic. I'm just not a pure alcoholic, because anything they fed me, I said yes. And the moment I turned tried cocaine, that was it. First love. What? That was it. I took my little paper route money. No, I didn't have paper route. My little snow shovel money. I worked all winter. And then my lawn money. Got that $25 together. Brought it to the guy. He gives me the little tiny thing. $25, that was a lot of money back then, 30, 40 years ago. He hands me a little thing back in newspaper, whatever that little thing was wrapped up in. That was like glory. It was, I opened it up, ha, woo, woo. Hallelujah chorus went on. The cocaine lit up until some light was right on top of it. All night with my 16-year-old friend, we did it, $25 worth. We like, wow, this is amazing. This could last forever. I'm like, this does last forever. It's like a whole night of incredible high. Next time it didn't last as long. And I was hooked. But I didn't have the money. Went off to college, didn't have any money for that kind of nonsense. That wasn't going to happen. I didn't become an addict to cocaine. But I was an addict to everything that would affect me from the neck up. Went to college, did some classes. You know, I went to school for hospitality management, hotel management, because I like to go to hotels. My dad was a high roller in Atlantic City, and so we spent a lot of time in hotels, and I thought that's what hospitality management was. And I did my internship in Atlantic City, and I found out that working in a hotel is different than going to a hotel. So I kind of felt like duped. But in my senior year of college, my uncle, who was my hero, who was a major internist down here. I don't even know if I've told you this, Andy. My uncle was an internist at the Holy Cross Hospital. 42 years old, a genius. Single. Had a Jaguar. This 40 years ago. Had a Jaguar when nobody had Jaguars. He lived on the Intercoastal. Had a mansion. Spoke two languages. He went to Italy and learned how to be a doctor and Italian at the same time while he was in medical school that was being taught in Italian. That's like big. I think that's amazing. You go to school in a language you don't speak and you learn both things. I failed English in America. You know what I'm saying? That's my problem. The bar is low in my family for me. Like verbs and nouns, that's some serious stuff right there. And my uncle died on the bottom of a swimming pool. Multi-millionaire, chief internist over at Holy Cross Hospital. Amazing man. Great man. Mighty man. And alcohol took him to the bottom of a swimming pool. Turns out he was an alcoholic. Took him to the bottom of a swimming pool, and all the people that were there were the waiters. Because alcohol is a disease of loneliness. I don't know if you know, you're going to get to a place. I know it seems all fun and games because some of you guys finished early, which is good. It is fun and games when you're young. But then as alcohol is either 12 and 12, or the big book calls it the rapacious creditor. It's a creditor that doesn't stop. That's the 12 and 12. The rapacious creditor, which means it's the creditor that doesn't stop coming for the money. And my uncle, even though he was wealthy and an amazing guy, he died on the bottom of a swimming pool. And the only people that were there were the waiters from Ruth Chris Steakhouse. And so I inherited a bunch of money. I'm the only male heir of an Italian family, and I inherited a bunch of money from my uncle. Everything from my uncle came to me. And I'm in college. And I really like the smell of cocaine. And now I have money. And now I could do it. And it got bad. It got real bad real fast. Because when you cross over an imaginary line. And I would imagine that if you're here on a Saturday night, you know about that imaginary line. What is that imaginary line? We used to use, and it was fun. And then it was fun, and it had a little problems. And then there was some problems, and it was fun. And then it was just problems. When you cross over into the last phase, it doesn't matter how old. There's a girl in here. I forget her name. She's amazing. What an inspiration. I think she came in when she was 16, and I think she picks up 7 years and 8 years and all that kind of. She comes to this 12-step house. She's an incredible inspiration. It doesn't matter your age. It matters your condition. I would imagine your wife probably came in at that age too, right? 17, 18. It matters your condition, not your age. And my condition was blown out at 21. At 21, I was hopelessly addicted to that horrible substance that was once my friend, where we could do video games and hang out and high-five each other. And instead it turned on me, and I wound up living underneath a closet in the fraternity house. And I set up an unbelievable security system in there where I bent nails across the door. And I felt like nobody could break this system. And when I finally came out like Willard from the movie underneath the stairs after the semester, look it up on YouTube, John. There was nobody there. Like the whole fraternity house had graduated. I came out like, I'm here. And everyone had gone. I had ran out of money and I had only to come out at night. And this was one time I came out during the day. And I always figured people were sleeping. Everyone was gone. I was hopelessly and horribly addicted. And now I wasn't using because I wanted to. I was using because I need to. And then I realized I have a problem. I don't know if this ever happened to you, that you have, when you have money, you don't realize you have a problem, but then when you run out of money, it seems like a very big problem. I'm like, this could be a serious problem. All my uncle's money is gone. This seems like a very serious problem. And I went home, and my family sent me to treatment. And I'm going to fast forward to this part of the story, but I just want to let you know that if it wasn't for the loving men in Alcoholics Anonymous, men and women, and in Narcotics Anonymous, because I was in both programs, that showed me amazing tolerance. I remember one time I shared, this is a true story, I'm not going to elaborate. One time I was sharing my heart, Jimmy, I was sharing my heart at a meeting in Minneapolis, and the guy, after I spoke, this is what the guy said to me. He didn't say it to me, that's how much they loved me. They said, you know, and I didn't understand it until like the next year. He goes, you know, when you first, right after I finish sharing, he goes, you know, first when you share in the beginning, you sound like a horse's ass. And then eventually, your ass pops out of your head pops out of your ass around 5 years. A lot of you shouldn't be sharing until you have about 5 years. That's the guy said right after I shared. And I was looking around the room like, man, these newcomers are really out of control here. You guys got to talk like that. Put them in your place, sir. And so they showed me an amazing amount of love and tolerance. And I was sober about 18 months and I didn't work any of the steps. I worked the fellowship. I was an amazing fellowship guy. Go 1 to 12 like in a week. I'm on the social committee. I'm doing it all. Picnics, dances. I was a big dance guy. Really can't stay sober on dances alone, I want to share with you. That's nothing in the first 164 pages that it says there is one that has all power. It's dances. May you find that now. Conventions. Doesn't say anything about conventions. It says that we are ordinarily a group that would not mix, and it's great to get together, and there's camaraderie, and there's fun, and there's laughing, and there's joking, but conventions won't keep you sober. Meetings won't even keep, meetings are important. But really what the whole thing of the program is the 12 steps. And I was refusing to do them. I really enjoyed some of the steps, but I really thought some of the other steps were optional. And Myron told me, he's like, these are not optional. I said, I think they are. I'm like, you know, I got a lot of answers. And the big one for me was step 6 and 7. Not to do. Yeah, people are like, all the old timers in here like, yeah, that really, like, you should. Yeah, no, I didn't do it. Because I got to 6, 7. I'm an intelligent guy. I almost finished college. I just want to let you share that with you. And you can see that 6 and 7 are not that important because they spend a lot of time on 5. There's a whole chapter. And then they have a half a paragraph on 6. And they have a prayer on 7. I said, this is obviously not that important. Right, Thomas? This can't be that important. If it was important, they would have spent more time. And I went right past 8, 9. That doesn't seem that important. 10, that's important. You should apologize for the start. I was big into 10. Because 10 would get me closer to you. I love making amends because then it puts me in the front and center. I love showing up to people. I want to tell you, I need to make amends to you. I love that kind of stuff. 11, you know, I got that. I'm half Jewish, half Italian. We'll just move on from there. 12, I was in 12 all the time. I was in dances. Dances were a lot of things for me. So I figured I kind of had the steps down. And what happened was I got very sick in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's when I was friends with Ricky. And he knows. He worked with me. I was very sick. Because if you don't get, if you have alcoholism of my sort and you give a kid a gun at 12 to shoot at you because you don't want him to leave you, that's not going to go away with sobriety. I was already sober 12 years when I did that. You see, sober will not heal mental illness. I know people think it is. They will. But not if the mental illness doesn't come from not sober. You see, if the only mental illness you have is when you're a whack job, then you take that out and you won't be a whack job. But I was a whack job before I used. I was restless, irritable, and discontent, and hitting people in the face and biting people before I ever used. So if you add sober to that, all you are is a person that's restless, irritable, discontent, hitting people and biting people, sober person. It's not the answer to my problems. But there is one that has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. That's the answer to my problems. And I didn't. And I knew it. And Myron was taking me around. And Wendy and Paul were taking me around. I was sitting on couches. And I was going to the Pine Island Club. And doing all this thing. And hanging out with Jimmy in Hollywood. And things were good. But I wasn't getting better. But I was having a great time in the fellowship. And do not mistake the fellowship for getting better. When I go to a movie, it's a great experience. I leave that movie, I high-five the person, I might even give it a 5-star review, but that's not life-changing. I didn't watch Schindler's List and go start a movement. You know what I mean? I think it's great. We high-five each other. Man, that was well done. Yo, let's get loaded. So the fellowship will not keep me sober. And that's the only thing I did. I remember Ricky and I would be at smoking cigars with Joe Q. And I'd say, let's go to the strip club. And Ricky said, no, we don't do that kind of stuff. I'm like, what do you mean we don't do that? We're not going to get drunk there. I'm not going to go to a strip club to get drunk. Ricky's like, no, we don't do that. That's not what we do. I'm like, that's what I do. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that. Not going to get drunk. And you can do anything in the world you want as long as you don't get drunk. That's not what it is. Practicing these principles in all our affairs. So anyway, basically, I got drunk, but I want to tell you how I got drunk. I want to tell you how amazing alcoholism. I see my beautiful wife in a circus. She worked in the circus. She was a showgirl in a circus on an elephant. People don't believe me that story, but it's true. When I was just in Colorado yesterday, and we were in a meeting yesterday morning, I tell it much more for an effect. I didn't do it for the effect now because I don't want to be in trouble. But but yesterday morning when we were in Colorado in a meeting, I'm like, I met my wife on an elephant. And then she was in the circus. And then everybody goes crazy. I'm like, no, it's a true story. And that's a true story. I saw her at the Fort Lauderdale Swap Shop, and she had this beautiful headdress on from Las Vegas, and she was on top of an elephant. And I was already restless, irritable, and discontent. I had been stuffing everything inside this God-sized hole that you could possibly think about. Girlfriends and money and cars and steroids and working out. And everything that I could stuff in this God-sized hole, and nothing was working until I saw her, this beautiful dark queen from Colombia. And I'm like, man, if I could score that girl, I should be just fine. And when I mean score, I don't mean score to sleep with her. I'm like I wanted to be with her for, I didn't say marry because that would have been a giant word, but I wanted to be with her for an extended period of time. Anyway, I knew she could heal what I had going on. And I wanted what she had, and I was willing to go to any length to get it. And eventually I just wore her down. I just pursued her and I stalked her, all those things together. And she just married me out of exhaustion. And we're on our wedding night and honeymoon, and we're in New Orleans. And this is, see, if you can't admit to your innermost self that you're powerless over alcohol right now, I mean right now, not tomorrow, right now. You got 3 days right now. You got 3 days right now. If you can't admit to your innermost self that you are not even alcoholic, that you're powerless over alcohol, you're going to drink again. And I'm 5 years sober, and I'm 5 years clean, and I'm not sober. What does that mean? I was 5 years clean, but I wasn't mentally sober. The Bible says to be sober-minded. The word sober comes from the Bible. It means to be sober-minded. It means to be of clear mind and conscience. But I wasn't sober. I was just clean. And I did not believe I was powerless over alcohol because I really didn't have an alcohol problem ever. I would have a cocaine problem, then a crack problem, but it seems to be the same substance. And I had a one substance problem. And so I'm 5 years clean, and the waiter comes over to our fancy table at the Emeril Lagasse's new restaurant, and we order, and the people next to us, they have wine and it's in a decanter in the middle of their table, and in that decanter there's like tubes coming out like a bong, and it's wine with a bong. And I'm like, this is some, I've never seen anything like this. And I can't let my wife know that I have alcoholism return, so I say behind the menu, I go to the server, I said, what's going on at the table behind, next to us? And she says, the people in the table next to us are drinking fine wine that needs to breathe first. I said, what? I had never heard that saying before, because I went right from Mad Dog 2020 to crack, and I miss fine wine. And I certainly miss fine wine that needed to breathe first. So at that moment, I wasn't powerless anymore. I had discovered a substance in my mind that I could do, and I wasn't powerless over fine wine, because I never tried it. And I came back and I told that woman there, she may not remember, I told that woman there, Wendy. I said, Wendy, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. She said, well, you may not be. She says, sometimes I don't think I'm an alcoholic. She said, but just stay. And for 2 years I stayed because of what Wendy said to me. But I knew I was going to drink again. I picked up my 7-year medallion in the back room and I left Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to try some fine wine. But you really got to know what you're doing with fine wine. Sheldon probably knows fine wine. I don't know fine wine. I wound up at August Moon Chinese food restaurant on Federal Highway. I had rice wine in a box. That's as fine as it ever got. And in the first day, because I'm not a pure alcoholic, in the first day, I was an Andor guy already in first day. First day I tried pills. I remember that I had gotten some pills when my dad drowned in a terrible accident. There was some Xanax in the house, and on the bottle it said, don't take with alcohol. When I was done with the prescription, I just put it in the back of the medicine cabinet. I never used it. It was done. And also it said, don't drink with alcohol. I mean, don't take with alcohol. So I had no use for it. But then after I took my drink, I was like a superpower. I was like, I remember the bottle that had an orange label in the back behind the shampoo, and I went and I got it, and within the first 12 hours, I was an Endor guy, alcohol Endor. And then I became an alcoholic. I was hiding booze on my wife, going to Walgreens. Half of Walgreens turns out to be a liquor store. I had nowhere, did not even see that. And I fell in love with alcohol, which is a crazy thing since I never drank. Anyway, a whole series of things happened, and I wound up in the Fort Lauderdale Hospital on suicide watch. And the nurse that called me today, Adam, was my nurse. I was hanging onto a wall because my wife had left. She served me with a restraining order, and I was on. I already told you I was on suicide watch, and I was at the lowest of the lowest, and I knew I was never going to get back. And God sent me an angel, two angels. It was a man from Alcoholics Anonymous that put his hand on my shoulder, and he saw me crying, and he said, Stevie B, you'll get back. You've helped a lot of people. It was a guy from our group in the back, and I never could remember his name, but maybe he was an angel. And he said, Stevie B, you'll get back. And there was a woman by the name of Denise Canchola that said, you'll get back, but I didn't believe it. And I want you to know, if you're here tonight and you think you can't get back, I'm telling you, you can. One day at a time, I'm going to say it slow so you don't think it's part of me talking fast. One day at a time, the power of God. You surrendering one thing, you have to give one thing away, alcohol. You surrender alcohol, God will give you everything. He's only asking you for one thing, alcohol. And I say alcohol in every form. You know, I did a lot of talking about drugs, and I usually don't do it, but there's a lot of newcomers here, but I want to pull it back a little bit for the respect for alcoholics. And this is alcohol. God wants you to give him his alcohol, your alcohol, and he's going to give you a life. Imagine that. You give away the thing that's killing you, and he's going to give you back a life. And slowly but surely, one day at a time, my wife put me in a halfway house around the corner from here with the help of the Broward Sheriff Department. A little piece of paper that says restraining order. And I went to the Liberty House around the corner. I want to tell you that sometimes the people that you hang around with, especially in the beginning, they'll be your friends for the best friends for the rest of your life. Right in this meeting tonight, I have two people that I was in the recovery house with, Liberty House. I got Mason sitting right there. We were together. We were roommates. We've been doing this thing together for 22 years. And Philly, Anthony Philly, that's sitting next to my wife. We were all together at Liberty House 22 years ago. And it hasn't been perfect. Of course it's not been perfect. Philly's went out a bunch of times. Mason has went out and had a temporary stint in incarceration. But he's back. He's totally sober, and he loves the Lord, and Anthony loves God, and we're totally sober together. We got our buddy, and our third roommate is Eddie, Big Eddie. He was 450 pounds. Now he's Skinny Eddie. And, well, only the last year was crack. That's not what I'm doing. Don't make jokes. He is Skinny Eddie now, and he's out in California. He's doing the deal. He went to a meeting with all the people we see on the movies. He's hooked up with the people in the movies. He's going to AA, loves AA. And then our last buddy is Todd. And Todd's drinking tonight. And Todd hasn't taken a sober breath except for a month or two in 10 years. And I want to tell you a story about Todd. And I love him. And his mother's in the hospital. If you're a person of faith, his mother's in real bad, Jane's in a real bad shape. She's dying. So if you can keep Jane in prayer. I want to tell you about my buddy Todd. My buddy Todd, because we're pretty serious Christians. I don't know if you know that about me, but I'm a minister. But I never get it confused. If I'm without AA, I'm going to drink. And I told my buddy Todd, and I told him, I said, listen, you got to go to AA. He said, I'm just going to do church. I'm going to start a church. And that, listen, that could work for some people. But the majority of us are going to need to have a program that God himself gave us. That's an actual program that we go to on a daily basis, so that when you can't have a personal connection with God in that moment, AA is a local call. When you can't reach long distance and you feel like God's not really, you may be disconnected from God in that moment, but the 12 step is close. God may be at that moment, you can't get to him, you get to your sponsor. Maybe you feel like you can't get God right now, you pick up, you call your support group. And my buddy Todd went out to start a church, and he's been drinking ever since. And so, if you can keep Todd and Jane in prayers, I appreciate that. But the reason I tell you that story is because we got into a halfway house, and I didn't know God, and my wife invited me to God. She invited me to meet God, and I met God in the church, and I always said I wasn't going to go to a church, but she invited me, and I wanted to get back in the big bed, so I didn't really care where she invited me to. If my wife was a Mooney, right now I'd be at the airport. But she invited me to a church, and I met God. And that's how I became a God guy. I gave my life to God right there on the spot, and I've been following him ever since. I'm on fire for God. Love him. He's changed me. Cleaned my voice up. Cleaned my act up. I used to do a lot of bad things in Hollywood and Fort Lauderdale that had nothing to do with drugs. I was arrested 3 times in sobriety. Did a lot of bad things. I was a really bad guy in sobriety. Have you ever heard that story about the guy that headbutted the guy at the Pompano Beach Group while John Williams was speaking and doing that beautiful slideshow on the Pompano Beach Group? Yeah, that's me. The guy that was arrested for making fake ID cards in the swap shop, and alcohol, tobacco, and firearms came and arrested him, put him in. That's me. That was a sober behavior. And then my coup de grace, my best one, is I coming out of the men's group on Wednesday night, the Fort Lauderdale men's group, I was arrested for picking up a prostitute outside the meeting while I was dating Sandy. That's how restless and irritable and discontent I was. And see, the most amazing thing is God doesn't hold that against me. I got on my knees, I asked God to forgive me, and he has. And I don't have to carry that burden today because I shared it with a sponsor in something called the fifth step. Now, was it easy for my wife to hear about? No, because the way she heard about it is we lost our only baby. And we were devastated. We had a baby's room built in the house. And it was a difficult time for us. And we had signed up for a adoption agency. And the adoption agency found out that I was arrested for picking up a prostitute. And that's how my wife found out. So imagine, we lose the baby. And then her husband's a degenerate and a liar. And a person that picks up prostitutes. But not even a good one, because it was a police officer. I can't even get that right. Not even like a good criminal. Not even a good pervert. Like a terrible pervert. And then a member of the mess. So we can't adopt a baby, but the member of the West Side Men's Group, his name is Bob Heaton. Happy Bob. May God rest his soul. He just died with, I'd say, about 20 years of sobriety. Right, Andy? We had about the same amount of time, Bob and I. Well, anyway, very sober. He died very sober. Just an incredible guy. And he was an attorney. And then he wasn't. He got caught with a couple kilos of cocaine. But he was a great attorney at one time. He still had his connections. Right? He still had his connections. And a member of our home group. Right, Paul? Just a great man. He told me about a Jewish woman by the name of Mindy from Boca. He said, why don't you call Mindy from Boca? And then she'll come down, she'll do a home study of your house, and if she deems you responsible, she may look the other way about what your charges. And like I told you, by then, Sandy and myself, we're like over the top Christians. We have like giant picture of Jesus. We got St. Francis statues. We have holy water. We have the Torah. We got the whole nine yards in the house. And so I said, and our friend Eddie had given me giant Jesus painting. And I said to Sandy, we probably should take giant Jesus down from Mindy, from Boca. It's a good time to like be a little bit, let's bring it down just a level. You know, she's still going to have to pass through the statues, but let's bring giant Jesus down. And my wife, in all her wisdom, she said, we're not going to pretend that who we're not. If God wants us to have a baby, it's not because we're going to take stuff down and hide it in a closet. You're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're a minister. You've been forgiven. And you're going to write everything down, and you're going to put down prostitute, and you're going to put down what happened to you, and you're going to put down cocaine, and you're not going to gloss over it. And I did that. And God sent this beautiful lady by the name of Mindy into our house, and she looked up at the pictures on the wall and everything. She said, do you think God gave you another chance? And I said, I know he did. She said, so why don't you think I'm going to give you another chance? I also want you to know that people are watching you in Alcoholics Anonymous. People are watching you. Talk is cheap. If you're spiritual inside the meeting and you're out there bashing women or men and talking nasty outside, people are watching to see if you're a hypocrite. People are watching you. The day we lost our baby, there was a woman in this room by the name of Jana, and she was watching me. I was praying with a kid by the name of Danny Tufo, whose brother happens to be sitting right here. And I was praying with a guy by the name of Mason, who happens to be sitting here. And we're outside a treatment center that she was in called Christian Recovery Solutions. And we were out there, and I was crying. And we were all praying in the parking lot. And she watched men pray and cry and then come in and bring in a meeting into her. And she knew that men could come in and they could cry and they could be hurting and they still stay sober. And she's 15 years sober today. She happens to be sitting here. Yeah, you can give the Lord a round of applause. Sponsors one of our amazing women and best friends, who was Nancy of Nancy's house and who has hundreds of children. All women. And so, not only are people watching, but God's watching. Because if you're one way in AA like I was spiritual Steve at one time and I was picking up prostitutes. So if you're one way in AA and you're one way out of AA, the two are never going to match. And when your outside conversation doesn't match with your inside conversation, it's eventually going to explode. Whether it explodes in suicide, whether it explodes when no one wants to be around you, whether it explodes with people talking about you behind your back, or you pick up a drink, it's going to explode. Practicing these principles in all of our affairs means practicing these principles in our affairs. Are we going to get it perfect? No. But we need to practice these principles, the 12 steps, and the principles behind them. And so Mindy comes, she signs off on the home study, and then we, like, God is so, he moves so fast when you get in line with. We had hired a surrogate. Imagine, listen how desperate we were, or I was, or we were. We hired a surrogate. You know what a surrogate is? That's their job, to give you a baby. It didn't work. We had eggs donated from South America, her country. It didn't work. But and we were kicked out of an adoption agency because that wasn't the one we should have been at, and that one wouldn't work. But we went to the one that should, and that was in the top of the United States by California. And we saw this beautiful little white baby. And I tell you white because this baby's really white. It's not like white, black. Where, you know, this is like, you, when you meet my son, you'll understand. He's like serious white. Because that's where they make them up there. You know, that's like part of the country where they make them. And she held up and she said, what would you like to name your son? And he was born that morning. And Sandy and I were crying, and we want to name him Joshua. And she said, why Joshua? And we said, because in the Bible, Joshua 24:15 says, for me and my house, we choose to serve the Lord, and we're going to serve God. She said, well, I'm not religious. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not religious. I said, well, it just means that your son, our son, is going to grow up in a godly home. And he has grown up. Raise your hands if you know that Joshua has grown up in a godly home. People that know me know he's growing up in a godly home. He knows his mommy and daddy ain't perfect, are not perfect, but we're godly people. And he's never seen a drink, obviously, and he's never seen us. Really, we only had one fight in front of him. It was a good one. My wife had a bad, but it was a good one. Just one. But other than that bad situation, it's been pretty good. And I want to just tell you how God shows up before I sit down. Because every single time you think you know what God's doing, he wants to show off. Just when you're about to take credit for something, he wants to show off. When you're about to say that it was Mindy from Boca that did it, he wants to show off. When you want to say it was because you went to the top of the United States and it's this specific Catholic Charities organization that helped you, God wants to show off. He wants to remind you that he's the one of the master's hand. He's the one that has the master's hand. Our son, for 9 months, he had no hair, totally white, totally bald. And then one day he sprung the most beautiful red hair and the most beautiful green eyes. And if I showed you a picture of my mom and my son, you'd think that my son came from my mom. He's the spitting image of my mom. He has the same button nose as his cousins. He has the same freckles as his cousins. He's got the same red hair as my mom. He's got the same green eyes as my mom. God, at 9 months, said, well, just in case you're telling the story, Steve, that you had something to do with this, I just want to remind you, you had nothing to do with this. You are a disgusting, degenerate, pervert, drug addict, felon that should never have been able to adopt a baby in the state of Florida. And I took you to a state up by California that has a reciprocal contract with Florida, and you didn't even know it existed. And now you have a baby. And so when you start walking around comparing your insides with other people's outsides because you don't have that, and you don't have this, and you don't have that, when you start comparing what you don't have, why don't you remind yourself what you do have, Steve? This is what God tells me. Why don't you write a gratitude list? You want to complain that you, because my eye still works and it looks all over the place and it drives me crazy. It gets me tired and I'm driving and it's in the other car. It's like looking around. I'm trying to drive this way and it's like checking out the billboard. I'm constantly having to talk it back in. Come on, buddy. Come on. Let's stay in this car. And my wife and I'll get out of a movie and I'm tired and have a migraine because it's been looking around. And I'll say to my wife, man, this is so hard. She'll remind me, well, you know what? You have two eyes. You have an eye that works and another eye that's still yours. You know, you have 2 feet to get to a meeting. You have a car. You know, when I start looking at other people, you have a car. I get to do a spin class with Kelly twice a week. We're not going to tell you where. We don't want you guys infiltrating it and 5,000 people show up. But I get to do a spin class. Like I had a near-fatal car accident 10 years ago. My back is broken, and I get to do a spin class with my friends. We're high-fiving each other. The spin class instructor said to Kelly last week, and she didn't think I heard it, but I heard what she said. I'm going to tell her what it is this week too, Kelly. She said, man, that guy has unbelievable energy. What is he on? And Kelly said, no, he's always like that. I'm going to tell her it's God. It's God. You fill yourself up with, Paul said, you seem extra excited tonight. Are you kidding me? A dear friend of mine picked me out of 150 worthy people of the West Side men's group that he could have picked, and he picks me? And then I get to tell you what, I was a terrible heathen that did all these kind of things, and God saved me, and now I'm coming up on 22 years of sobriety in January. I get the friends like you people. I get to hang out with Paul and Russell and Dion and Paul and all these different, are you kidding me? I've been given a life beyond my wildest dreams, and the word grace means I didn't deserve any of it. I'm not here by my power. I'm not here by my strength. He didn't pick me because I was incredible. He picked me because I was broken. And I show up for him on a daily basis, and I say yes, and I fly out to Colorado if I need to, and I'll fly out to California if I need to. I'll show up on your doorstep. I've kicked down houses where people are smoking crack, and that's my drug of choice because this is what he has asked us to do. It's in the big book of the 12. It's in the 12 step. He says there's 5 reasons why we do this. One of it's to ensure our sobriety. One of it's because we owe a debt. One of it's because there's a whole bunch. Read Dr. Bob's story. He says it because it's my way of paying a debt. Are you kidding me? There's a great speaker by the name of Rob Sanchez. No matter where I call him, no matter what I ask him, he lives up in the big time in Boca. I say, Rob, will you come down and speak to my little treatment center in Hollywood? And he always says yes. And he comes down and he says, how can I say no for what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me? And that's the way we feel. We just buried our dear friend, may God rest his soul, Andy and Dave and all of us at the West Side Men's Group. His name is Larry Binder, may God rest his soul. Just amazing man of God. Just the simplest, nicest mensch of a man. If you don't know what mensch means, just a gentleman. And we had 150 people, maybe 300 with women and children. Give him a send-off, because in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're never going to have to go through anything alone. I'm going to finish up right now. Don't worry. You're never going to have to go to anything alone. You're never going to have to go to a funeral alone. You don't have to go to a wedding alone. You don't go to vacations alone. We do everything together. Right, Paul? We have an amazing life. And the only thing that you have to give away is yourself to God. And he gives you back a life that's beyond your wildest dreams. Thank you so much. God bless you, guys.